The spirit of performance is what defines Acura. And now, it's electric. Introducing the ZDX, Acura's most powerful SUV yet. Crafted using the same formula that brought them electrified supercars and multiple IMSA championships, the ZDX has track-tested performance that packs an energy all its own. Unlock the energy and order yours at Acura.com.
There are some things that are too good to keep a secret. Like how your Amex Platinum card helps you have the perfect trip. I'd like to check into the Centurion Lounge. Or how it seems like you always get those hard-to-snag tables.
Ooh, yum.
And how you get the most out of select can't-miss events. With access to the Centurion Lounge, Resi Priority Notify, and Amex card member benefits at select events, you'll have to share. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
You're listening to the Back Home Network, presented by Home Field Apparel. And welcome, Hoosier fans, to this special edition episode of the Assembly Call, our 1,033rd episode overall, recorded here on the afternoon of April 23rd, 2024. And we are going to oxymoronically refer to this episode as a delayed emergency podcast because we're here to break down the commitment of Kanan Carlisle, who announced his commitment to Indiana over the weekend. But this was our first chance to gather together and talk about him. So very excited this afternoon to be joined by Tony Adragna, who does obviously our IU film room work on our Substack, and also the host of the Write Up Meridian podcast with Scott Caulfield as they chronicle the Pacers' playoff stay, which hopefully is longer than maybe what game one would indicate that it might be. But welcome, Tony. Thanks for being free on short notice to do this today.
Yeah, happy to be here. Obviously, I've got my Pacers garb on. I should have ran to the closet to grab a home field hat. I'm ready to rock and roll with the Pacers. I'm ready to rock and roll talking some Carlisle. Exciting day here in the Hoosier State to deal with basketball.
Absolutely. You know, your podcast, Right at Meridian, is one that we haven't talked about a ton. It probably has been promoted less, the least of all the Back Home Network podcasts. But I know you guys are getting rolling with that. We sent out an email announcement about it last week. Give us the quick synopsis of what you guys are doing and how often episodes are going out.
Yeah, it's fun. Yesterday Scott was like, "We have a couple listener questions." I'm like, "Wait, we have listeners? Holy crap! This is new." Scott and I both have a love for the Pacers. We've caught several games together, and we both like chatting it up here on the airwaves. So we're like, "Hey, how about a Pacers podcast?" So we started throwing the idea together last summer, and then really started hitting the ground running, recording in like November when the Pacers season started, and we tried to get content out once a week. And it's really like a higher 40,000 view of the Pacers. We talk about like possible additions to the team that they could do in the offseason. It's nowhere near the level of like breakdowns and stuff like that. Like the NBA game is so advanced that it's beyond my comprehension. Like I leave that to like Caitlin Cooper, and there's a lot of people that do a lot of great stuff with Pacers and X's and O's, but it's purely like a fan podcast of just a couple dudes chopping it up as fans of the Pacers and what we'd like to see them do. So we have a great time with it. As you said, we call it Write Up Meridian, which was a Slick Leonard phrase that he used in his color commentary. So we have a lot of fun with it. We would love to have you guys join us and listen in if you're a Pacers fan. And hopefully we can continue talking about these playoffs here and the Pacers can make a run. So excited about that.
Let's hope so. Lisa says, "Where's the siren?" See, I thought about that. You know, if it was an emergency podcast, we would do the siren, but it's like 3 days after his commitment, so that seemed like overkill because we kind of missed the chance for this to be an emergency. So this is just kind of your run-of-the-mill special edition, not a post-game show, not Assembly Call Radio, but we didn't want to wait all the way until Thursday. Plus, I will just give you a heads up. The NFL draft is Thursday. Ryan's going to be working for that. I'm getting prepped for a camp out Friday. We may not do Assembly Call Radio Thursday. It could be delayed till next week, or we might try and do something in between. So we wanted to make sure we got this episode out now, just in case the rest of this week's schedule gets a little screwy, just based on availability. So anyway, just wanted to put all of that out there. And the last thing I'll say before we begin here, Tony, talking about Kane and Carlisle, is just a word about our presenting sponsor, Home Field Apparel. I am continuing to model my favorite snapback hat from Home Field Apparel, which probably isn't a great choice since it's sold out. And people always ask me, like, hey, where can I get that hat? And I send them the link and it's sold out. But this is part of the Home Field Apparel experience, where their stuff is so great that it does sell out from time to time. But I'm sure that they will bring new stuff back. But if you haven't seen their Little 500 collection, which they released last week, it's awesome. Like, it was one of those collections. I looked at it, bought three items just right off the bat. They had another great snapback hat. And their Little 5 bomber jacket, it's black with the Little 5 written out on the back. It's a top five Home Field Apparel item, I think. I mean, it just looks so sharp. So go check out our friends at Home Field Apparel. The promo code is HOME23. That'll get you 15% off your first order. And then always be checking. Subscribe to the text alerts. Follow them on Twitter. Subscribe to emails. They do lots of flash sales that might give you 20% off. And so just be on the lookout for that so you can save. But that's our friends at Home Field Apparel, and they present every show on the Back Home Network, including Right Up Meridian, Doing the Work, Crimson Cast, every show that we have going on here. They are the presenting sponsor for, and we love them for it. All right, Tony, we are here to talk about Kane and Carlisle, which, you know, it was an interesting recruitment, and maybe we can start off talking about this before we dive into the scouting report. There had been so much chatter about him from a lot of the different insider accounts, you know, and that, hey, you know, this is kind of a done deal and he's coming, you know, weeks before the visit, that to a certain extent, I think for some of us, it almost felt anticlimactic when he visited and committed, because it's like, oh yeah, we've been assuming that. You know, some of our conversations here talking about Miles Rice, talking about Umar Ballo, have just kind of assumed that Carlisle is coming, you know, which on the one hand, I think speaks to this new reality where a lot of times, you know, things are happening in back channels and even before visits and stuff, you know, there's, you know, not maybe like ironclad deals, but there's good assumptions of what's going to happen when a guy visits. But also maybe we got lucky and it was kind of foolish because you just saw Elijah Hawkins with Minnesota who said, hey, I'm committed, I'm coming. And then like 7 days later, someone comes in with a higher bid and he goes to another school. So, you know, it's tough to know like what's locked in and what's for sure these days. You know, really just want to get to November and see who's actually on the roster then. But it did just kind of feel a bit anticlimactic when the commitment came. But that does not mean that the commitment was not important, as we're going to talk about, because I think Carlisle brings a lot of really, really interesting traits, you know, to this Indiana roster. But just what was your overall impression just of the whole path to getting here to Kanan's commitment?
It's just something that I think it's hard for college basketball fans to wrap their minds around and, like, I don't want to say appreciate, because it's just a new normal. And you know, you could argue the merits of it till you're blue in the face, but I'm grateful that, you know, it's how the game is played and Indiana's playing it, you know, that, and that's really what's most important to get dudes like this is you got to play the game and you got to back channel and do things like that. And you have to have good relationships with people that matter. And for Indiana's case, you know, a lot of what may not get discussed a ton is just like how much agents play a factor in college athletes and where they choose to go. And Indiana's got really good relationships with their staff and agents. And then in these cases with Rice and Carlisle, they're both from the Atlanta area. Indiana's got a guy on staff in Coach Yah that has great connections down the Atlanta area. So just a lot of things working in Indiana's favor to even have them on the radar of Carlisle. And, you know, to be honest, Carlisle was actually on the radar last season. You know, there was talks of Haas, or however you pronounce it, at Stanford being fired before last season. And Indiana kind of had Carlisle on their radar already of somebody they wanted to pounce on as a possible senior decommit that Woody's done well with. So it's, you know, it's an interesting thing. It's not something that I know a lot of people are in love with and how it works out. But, you know, Indiana having those relationships in place, plus having a Miles Rice commitment, and he and Kanan Carlisle are both good friends from the Atlanta area. You know, a lot of tea leaves were really reading into Carlisle. And sometimes I would accidentally say something on Twitter about, you know, Indiana's commits and include Carlisle. And people are like, wait, he committed already? I'm like, no, I just kind of forgot he hasn't. I'm thrilled that he's a Hoosier. I think, you know, as we'll discuss here on the pod, I think, you know, he had an up and down freshman season. But when we dive into the numbers here and some of the stuff on film, I think people will be excited about this addition, certainly. So,
yeah, boy, isn't it interesting? You know, agents were personas non grata in college sports for the longest time, and now they're so important, you know. And obviously, like you said, the relationships are key. Having a money tree that you can shake that is competitive with the other top schools, also very important. And to your point, this is the game and Indiana's playing it. And we can all have our misgivings about it, but at the end of the day, if the goal is for Indiana basketball to win games, it's hard to argue with the path that they're taking this offseason in terms of building a roster to win for next season. And Carlisle is a big part of it. So let's talk about him. And I think it's been really interesting, you know, in the discussions I've had with people about him. Like, okay, you take Miles Rice, what he did as a freshman, you look at some of the numbers, it's like, okay, I see this. I see how this is a big impact, especially given how bad, you know, the lead guard play was last year. Like, as much as, you know, I personally like Xavier Johnson, as much as everybody likes Gabe Cupps, by any objective measure, Indiana's point guard play in aggregate last year was below replacement level. And you just can't compete that way. So people get Miles Rice. You look at Umar Ballo, who has 4 years of a long, healthy track record of excellent production. Very easy to see how plugging him into Khalil Ware is going to fit and people can get excited. You know, you look at you know, Bryson Tucker, right? A five-star, high-potential guy, helps you replace Liam McNeely. Very easy to see that. Carlisle has been the guy that I feel like people don't quite know what to do with. Because you look at some of the overall numbers, right? Like, whoa, his offensive rating is 92. You know, his three-point shooting, all right, 32%. Like, that's fine. But his turnover rate is 20%. And, you know, you look at some of the box scores. Wow, there were a lot of ups and downs there. And I think some people look at it and are like, well, but don't we need a shooter, quote unquote, in the two guard? And, how good is this guy actually? And to me, I think this is one where you really have to look deeper, understand the context of the situation he was playing in at Stanford, and also remember how much guys improve from freshman to sophomore seasons. And, you know, as I've said many times, when you're trying to analyze a freshman, look, obviously, if the numbers are great, like, that's awesome. You know, if you have Zion Williamson's numbers as a freshman, like, yes, that guy has a chance to be an amazing player, no question.
And but he's only going to play as a freshman.
Right, exactly. But if it's more of a sweet spot type recruit, which is what Carlisle is, right, to borrow a phrase from our friends at the Back Home Network, X's and Joe's, right? The kind of recruit that's probably somewhere between 30 to 80 in the rankings, and Carlisle, I think, was number 55 or somewhere around there as a high school recruit. You know, a guy who is really talented, but maybe doesn't have the physical traits to be a one-and-done NBA type guy. This is what Carlisle projects as. And for guys like that, I think you want to pay less attention to the aggregate freshman year stats and pay more attention to when this guy was going, what's the high end here? And Carlisle is a guy who scored 32 points. He had a few games of, you know, 25-plus points. And you saw the flashes, and that's where, okay, now as this guy gets used to the speed of the game, adds some physical and emotional maturity, you know, improves his shooting, you can really start to see the vision for how this guy is going to be an impactful guard. So let's just start there with your initial impressions of Carlisle and his freshman year at Stanford. And I think, you know, the expertise I'd love for you to give us here, because I know you've watched a ton of film, is what kind of situation was he in at Stanford, and how does that kind of color those numbers? Because obviously the coach got fired, everybody has left. It wasn't the most stable situation that he was playing in there.
Yeah, I mean, that kind of spells it out for you, right, in terms of the situation that he was in, with the coach being let go. And, you know, as I mentioned, it was kind of rumored he might have been let go before Carlisle even got there. And he really had an all-in year. And the product that Stanford put out there just, quite frankly, was tough to watch. You know, as you mentioned, I watched a lot of Carlisle film and doing kind of the scouting report stuff on him. And Stanford was just, they were tough to watch, man. They stood a lot on offense. They would drag the shot clock down to low numbers, and then guys would have to take a tough shot. There didn't really seem to be a lot of cohesion between the guys. Because, I mean, if you look at players on Stanford's team, like they had a good roster on paper for sure. But like I said, it just wasn't a great situation, I don't think, for Carlisle. And I think he made some lemonade out of lemons sometimes. You know, he had a 31-point game against Miles Rice in Washington State, and really put up some big numbers. Then he kind of had some stinkers here and there as well, where it kind of seemed like he was just out there on the floor, which, again, not that uncommon for a freshman that is going through the ups and downs of a college basketball season, especially one in Carlisle where I believe he didn't play his first game until like 8 or 9 games into the season. You know, didn't play until mid-December for Stanford. And so he was kind of playing catch-up most of the year as well. Like those first 6-7 games as a freshman are so vital to what you do. And instead of being able to like dive into some bye games and things like that, like he's jumping right into the conference season as his first welcome to college basketball, which I think is important context to think about kind of an up and down season with him as well. But you know, he was a really, really good spot up shooter, which excites me because on Stanford, he really had to be more of a primary playmaker. And at Indiana, he can be that. But I think Miles Rice is really where you're going to have your primary playmaking ability. And then he can kick out to Carlisle, and then Carlisle can attack a defense that's closing out on a long closeout, or can shoot on a spot up where he was in the 80-something percentile as a freshman. Like, though, that's the context that I want IU fans to look at with Carlisle. Now, I'm not saying that he's going to be the perfect player or anything of that nature, but I think, as you noted, Jared, you know, when the numbers aren't really that great on paper, but you dive into, okay, where did he thrive? And then you look at, okay, what's his role going to be on this Indiana team? That's where I think things kind of get exciting for this backcourt, especially when, you know, I think a lot of folks saw Stojakovic going into his freshman year. They're like, man, that's a dead-eye shooter. He was great in AAU. I'm talking about Andrej Stojakovic. He was at Stanford as well with Carlisle. They shot, I think Stojakovic shot 2 more threes than Carlisle, and he made 2 more threes than Carlisle. So their percentages were pretty much equal, around 32-33%. And one of those, which is like a dead-eye shooter, is what people defined him as going into college. And the other one is Carlisle, who really had to take a lot of tough shots as shot clocks were winding down, and they really shot the same from outside. And I think that just kind of spells the situation I was talking about as well. So I know I just spit a lot at you there, Jared, but that's kind of the full context of the situation that I think is important for IU fans to kind of grasp and understand.
I'll add a little bit more to the context too. You know, Stanford last year had one player basically who played the full season with an assist rate over 20, because their starting point guard, Jared Bynum, who did have an assist rate of 38.4%, you know, a really solid distributor, he got hurt for the second part of the season. And as you said, Carlisle missed the first 9 games, so their playing time didn't overlap a ton. And so that's why when you look at Carlisle's 216 field goal attempts, he took 53 catch and shoot jumpers, 101 dribble jumpers. Well, on those catch and shoot jumpers, he scored 1.19 points per shot. Or said another way, 59.4% effective field goal percentage. That's excellent. Like, to put that in context, Luke Goody last year at Illinois, who obviously Indiana is looking at as a quote-unquote shooter, he averaged 1.15 points per shot on catch-and-shoot jumpers. So Carlisle can shoot it. Now, on the dribble jumpers, his efficiency really dropped, but part of that is because their primary distributor is gone, and now he's being asked to kind of step into that role. And this is where I think, you know, the guy that I keep coming back to when I look at the numbers is Jalen Hood-Schifino. Because every time I look at Carlisle's numbers, I'm like, wow, that kind of reminds me of Jalen from his freshman season. Then I'll look, and it's really similar, you know, to where Jalen actually was really good as a catch and shoot guy as a freshman. But once X got hurt, he didn't have the luxury of doing that. He had to be the primary guy, got forced into some tough shots, obviously had some huge games like the Purdue game. And then you think about the game at Maryland where he went like 1 for 13. There were ups and downs there. But you saw with Jalen the high points. And so the thing I would say to Indiana fans, if you're like, well, I don't know how to feel about Kanan Carlisle, how would you feel if Jalen Hood-Schifino was coming back for a sophomore season? What would your expectations be? And I think it would be fair to put Carlisle at like 85 to 90% of that. doesn't quite have the size. Huchefino, you know, rated a little bit better in some of the offensive metrics, slightly. But that is the comparison that keeps coming back to me, both in terms of their style and the numbers. Is that fair? Like, do you agree with that at all?
I think it is fair. And I think that when you look at portal rankings, which is really hard to do, so I'm absolutely saying take this with a grain of salt, because there's 360 some teams in the country, and there's no way that these guys that are ranking all these guys watched every single guy play, you know, all of their games and understand how they fit into context and all of that stuff. But with that said, ESPN and 24/7 both had Kanan Carlisle ranked above Miles Rice in their portal rankings. I think 24/7 had him at 10 and Rice at 18. I think ESPN had Carlisle at 9 and Rice at 10. And so that, again, wasn't necessarily based on his college production. Some of it is, because he did produce as a freshman, you know, not to some grand standard or anything like that, but he produced as a freshman. But then you factor in that sophomore jump, which is where you typically see the greatest jump in a college player's development, as you noted, has been talked about on X's and Joe's with Bob Motes and Mike. So that part of it is exciting as well. But yeah, I think that comparison is a good one in terms of what you would expect in a sophomore season from each of those guys. Like you said, obviously, Jalen Huchefino had the length that NBA teams fell in love with, and he could kind of run the show that NBA teams also fell in love with and made him a lottery pick. But with that said, in terms of college production, their numbers look very, very similar. And like you also said, Jalen Huchefino got thrown into kind of a tough situation. Now, granted, he had, in my opinion, the best player in college basketball that season in Trayce Jackson-Davis, that helped things along. But with Carlisle, he lost his primary playmaker, and he had to kind of take the reins there, which you might say, well, okay, well, what if something happens to Rice? Well, then you've got somebody like a Trey Galloway that can also step in and be a playmaker and a creator. And then if you start talking about those three on the court together, that's when you start cooking with gas, you know? That's when things can get really exciting about playmaking ability, and something that Indiana has just really lacked for several years from their guard spots.
Those three together, Mbako at the four, Renew at the five. Good luck stopping that. I mean, that is some serious offensive firepower with those guys. So let's talk about fit, you know, because it's one thing to say, okay, here's, you know, this guy's strengths and weaknesses, and I'd love for you to weave those in just to give people, you know, an idea of what to expect. But how does he fit with now this roster that is coming together? And still there's work to be done on the back end, you know, getting a shooter, getting a backup big. But it seems pretty clear right now, you know, you've got a first seven of Rice, Carlisle, Galloway, Mbako, Renew, Ballo, Tucker, right? And so, and there's a whole lot of potential and ability there. How do you see him fitting in? How do you see, based on what we know of Mike Woodson's offense, and I will say, you know, the one kind of unfortunate thing through 3 years is we haven't really gotten to see Mike Woodson's offense for an extended period of time with two competent high-level guards healthy at the same time. We got a few brief flashes of it with Jalen and Xavier. You know, think about the North Carolina game, you know, Jalen's season and what that looked like. You know, and so some of this, if we can keep those guys healthy, is going to be some uncharted territory. What do you think is the vision? How do you foresee it all kind of fitting together, both on the stuff you have confidence in and the stuff you have questions about?
Sure. I mean, this was kind of an exercise I was doing the other night, just trying to figure out like minutes distributions. And I just was like, all right, here's a tool I created to the masses on Twitter of, you know, trying to project out where the lineup is, how it fits together. I think last Tuesday or Wednesday, I went on Twitter and kind of talked about an offensive structure that with this lineup configuration, because there are still the folks that are going to talk about, you got Malik Renew at the four and Umar Ballo at the five, and that's two bigs. It's what Mike Woodson has done throughout the duration of his tenure at Indiana and even back in the NBA, there's concerns with that. The concerns typically stem from clogging the lane, not being driving lanes, things like that. So, you know, what I kind of put out there, and this isn't like some earth-shattering thing I've discovered, the Horn Set is a great series for teams that have some bigs in roster configuration like Indiana does, where you can still utilize two bigs, use their strengths, but you can also open the floor up. And it's really, Indiana didn't necessarily go horns a ton to end the season, but Indiana still played two bigs to end the season, and they opened their floor up a little bit more and didn't just park bigs in the lane, especially on ball screens, things like that, because a lot of times, you know, Indiana gets crucified somewhat for their long two, and you know, you and I are in that camp of we don't like that shot. Well, a lot of the times that shot is a necessity because Indiana's running a ball screen action, the big's in drop coverage, and another big is planted on the other block. It's like, well, where is that guard going to go to get a shot outside of pulling up from 15 to 17 feet or whatever the case may be? So I think if Indiana can open some things up, that takes away one of their most inefficient shots in basketball from the offensive structure, or at least, you know, minimizes it. And that part of it is exciting. But as you noted, having two creators in Carlisle and Rice is just something we haven't seen in the Mike Woodson tenure. And Mike Woodson comes from an NBA background. NBA background is about finding matchups and then exploiting them. Well, Indiana hasn't had a ton of matchups to exploit at the guard spots throughout Mike Woodson's tenure. You know, they've had situations here and there, but now they have real opportunity to have good matchup situations at the guard spots. And when your guards can create advantages, that creates advantages for everybody else. NBA is all about playing advantage games. Basketball is all about playing advantage games. You get by your guy, somebody has to come help, now you're in a 4-on-3. You run a empty side pick and roll, which is two guys on one side and two guys guarding him, and it becomes a 2-on-1. Like, that's all basketball is creating advantages. Now Indiana has guards that can create advantages, which just opens everything else up for everybody else, which is why I have a lot of excitement for this season and for these guys, because Indiana can finally do that. Like, you watch the NCAA tournament, and you see these guards just going coast to coast, toe to toe, getting shot after shot, and it's just like, Indiana doesn't have that, and they haven't had that for a while. And so that's where I get excited.
So, look, Carlisle's not the perfect player, and we've seen plenty of issues with the way that Indiana has run offense through three seasons, some of which have certainly been related to, you know, lack of guard play or lack of guard availability because of injuries. So, you know, what are your concerns? You know, with Carlisle specifically, like, things that you saw that he really needs to improve on, and then your concerns about where things could get bogged down.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, with Carlisle, he obviously wasn't very efficient last season. You know, his offensive rating was in the low 90s, and that has to improve to be an effective guard in the Big Ten and to be effective for Indiana. So where does that come from? It's from taking good shots. And that sounds so simplistic, but it's just the nature of it. You know, don't take bad shots, don't take contested shots, and let the offense flow and work within that offense, and you should be able to get good shots considering the talent on the floor. So that's number one. Where does he thrive? Last season, at least, he was very good in spot-up situations. He was good coming off of handoffs. Indiana runs a lot of, like, zoom action stuff, which is basically a big handing off into a down screen, and the guard can turn the corner. And the nice thing about zoom action is there isn't a lot of reads. Pick and roll is all about reads, and ball screens are all about reads. And when you're a freshman that has really gotten whatever you wanted whenever you've played basketball, because you're just one of the best players in your class in the world, and so you get to college basketball, and all of a sudden teams are game planning against you. It's not easy. You're playing against seven-footers, and you actually have to, like, make reads, and those things are tough for freshmen to wrap their minds around. So, you know, Carlisle wasn't great in ball screens, but he was great in handoffs, which are essentially the same play. You know, you're coming off of a big, but in the handoff situations, he was able to just automatically be downhill, and really he was just able to get to the cup and score it, whereas ball screens, big was hedging out or whatever the case may be, and then he had to start making reads, and that's why his turnover rate was a little bit higher than you would want it to be. So for Carlisle in particular, he's got to be more efficient. That comes down to making good shots, or taking good shots, excuse me, and making good reads when the ball is in his hands. In terms of, like, the roster construction as a whole, I'm excited about where Indiana's at with creators. I think creators are more important than the quote-unquote shooters that a lot of people are clamoring for. Now, don't get me wrong. I love a dude that can fill it up from the outside. And I think Indiana's in a good spot with Luke Goody from Illinois that can kind of be that stretch three, four, whatever you want him to be, that can knock down big shots for you and can kind of close games out for you as well at more of a big spot because he shoots free throws well too. But like I also said, there's still that too big starting lineup that Indiana's going to roll out there, and there has to be some schematic changes for that group of five guys, whoever it may be, to be most effective. Again, Indiana took really inefficient shots last season, and they paid the price for it. I do think analytics certainly play a factor in the game of basketball. I'm not saying they're the end-all be-all. I'm not saying every single thing needs to be taken as the gospel, but they're a part of the equation. And so I think Indiana needs to recognize where they were inefficient last season and try to minimize those things. And I'm excited about what they can bring. Now, when I think about where were the struggles last year, obviously offensively they were bad in a lot of different areas. I think one thing Ballo brings to the table is offensive rebounding, which immediately ups your offensive efficiency when you can get offensive rebounds and you're scoring on those possessions that were empty possessions last season. So that's exciting. That's going to make the offense better. And then the guard creation ability is just, not to put down last year's team, they weren't very good at it. And they're going to have guys that are capable of doing that. But again, Indiana has to prove that. They've got to make some changes to how they run offense. They got to push the pace much better, I think. They're going to have dynamic guards that can score in transition. You got to get them out and go. Don't walk the ball up the court and set up the half-court offense. Like, just play to your strengths. I know it sounds so simple, but that's truly where the good things lie.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match. With Indeed. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/match. Just go to Indeed.com/match right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/match. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This episode is brought to you by Philo. Do you love TV? Do you love saving money? Then Philo is your solution. Philo has shows, movies, and live TV for just $25 a month. You can even try it for free with their 7-day free trial. No contracts, no commitments, no hassles. Just a better way to watch TV. Never miss a minute of shows like the hit docuseries Where is Wendy Williams? Or classics such as Friends. If you can't get enough TV, then there's no better way to watch. Philo has more than 70 channels like BET, MTV, and AMC. And the best part? You can try it yourself with their 7-day free trial. Sign up today at philo.tv/poppods. That's philo.tv/poppods to get 50% off your first month.
You know, one of the things you talk about last season in the two big lineup, one of the things I think will surprise a lot of people is if you look at Evan Maya. Is it Evan Mia or Evan Maya? Do you know?
I call him Maya. You call him Mia. So
Maya. All right, I'll go with Maya. Okay, so if you go to evanmaya.com, he has breakdowns of the top two-man, three-man, four-man, five-man lineups. For as many issues as it felt like the trio of Mbako, Renew, and Ware presented, right? Just because of, hey, we've got two bigs, plus you got Mbako trying to guard threes. Like, there was so much consternation about this. Do you realize that Indiana's five-man starting lineup with Cups, Galloway, Renew, I know you realize this, but to the audience members, Cups, Galloway, Mbako, Renew, Ware was a top 40 lineup in terms of efficiency in the country. So even with all of the issues, and even with Cups' inability to produce box score stats, that five-man lineup was very efficient. And think back to how many times Indiana got off to good starts in first halves, good starts in second halves, and couldn't sustain it. Reason being, in large part, any lineup that featured two or more bench players was, awful. We're talking about like minus 30, minus 40 in terms of net rating. Or in the second half, guys would just get tired and couldn't sustain it. And so I absolutely think, you know, that there are challenges to the two big lineup. I do think a little bit, is it overrated? I think maybe in some cases when you put guards like this with them, you know, a guy like Miles Rice who can attack, who can make decisions. And when you look at the shooting, right, because this is the next big question, and this is going to be the question that holds Indiana back in every preseason ranking and everything is, okay, this looks great. You got Ballo, you got your guard. Where's the shooting going to come from, right? And if you just look at stats, right, Ballo, not a shooter. McKenzie Mbako, what was he, 32-33% overall, if you're not breaking it down by conference play. Renew was 33% at low volume. Carlisle, 32% at moderate volume. Rice, 27% on moderate volume. That does not seem like a lineup that has a whole lot of three-point shooting. I'm personally more bullish on it because I expect a big jump from Mbako in terms of volume and efficiency. I expect the same from Carlisle. Malik's a bit of a wild card, but I expect him to be better. And I think Rice's numbers were better than the 27% showed. When you look at the starting lineup in terms of shooting, what's your concern level on A, how efficient they'll be, and B, you know, do we have the kinds of guys to where we can actually get the volume up to a respectable level? Because that's the other issue, obviously, is the three-point volume has just been so low that it almost doesn't matter what the efficiency is because you're not shooting enough for it to matter.
Yeah, I love, you know, burning the nets. Like, nothing gets me more excited than my team just hitting three after three. Like, I'm a Pacers fan. That's all they do is shoot threes, basically. With that said,
whiplash you must have watching basketball.
Yeah, it's a wild ride. It's a wild ride. You know, but with that said, I do think the shooting gets a little bit too magnified. I love shooters. I think it's fun when your team is knocking down threes, but I still think creation ability is the absolute most important thing you can have on your roster, because those creators can then create shots and better opportunities for guys, and that's where things get better. Like, Indiana was a good three-point shooting team in Trace's senior year because Trace, the gravity he had on the offensive end just opened things up for so many other guys. I mean, I know Trey Galloway had a tough season last year regardless of if he had Trace or not, but if you look at his shooting percentage with Trace versus without Trace from his junior year to last season for Trey, I mean, it was night and day difference. Well, he was getting better looks. Now, some of it was just Trey's confidence level, and those things all certainly play a factor. But creators are so important to an offense. And when I have this conversation with people, look, I was as pessimistic as they come about Indiana last season, and I'll own that. That's fine. I'm excited about next season because of the creation ability. And people will be like, well, how can you be excited there's no shooters on this roster or in this starting lineup or whatever the case may be? And my rebuttal to that is that UConn in the NCAA tournament shot 27% from three. They boat raced every single team that they played. Now, I'm not saying Indiana's going to have this wonderful offense that, you know, is aesthetically pleasing and is number one in the country, anything like that, but it also showcases that shooting isn't the end-all be-all to having a great offense, because I think anybody that watched UConn in this tournament can very well say that they have an awesome offense. And it wasn't because they were burning the nets. It was because they had movement and they had creation ability. And that is one thing Indiana's going to have to get better about, is its movement. But they do have the creation ability now, which to me is your most important factor, and it creates shots for other guys. And, you know, you don't have McKenzie Mbako that's trying to get his own shot. You don't have Trey Galloway who has to create his own shot all the time. Like, those are guys that are better in spot-up situations, and they're going to have better shots this year because they have better creators.
Yeah, and look, you know, obviously if you can get a guy like Goody or the kid from Florida Gulf Coast that they're looking at, that gives you some more of that, okay, we need just a, like, knockdown shooter. Let's put this guy in there. But I would not underrate the potential for McKenzie Mbako to be a 38, 39, 40% three-point shooter, even at high volume. He's going to get better looks this year. And I think Carlisle profiles as a 35, 36, 37% guy when he can get more catch and shoot. And so if you project that, now the lineup starts to make a lot more sense. And I get it. We always get in trouble in the offseason, you know, projecting things forward that we haven't seen yet. And so I understand the caution of those who want to see it first. But just in terms of guys making the freshman to sophomore jump, you know, that's a little bit more reliable if you believe in the talent. And there's a reason Mackenzie Mbako was a McDonald's All-American. There's a reason Cannon Carlisle was a top 60 recruit. And their ability to shoot was a big part of it. So I don't say, you know, I can't disabuse myself of all of the concerns that I have. And so I don't begrudge anybody for keeping those concerns. I do think the shooting concerns are slightly overblown based on what a reasonable projection for some of these guys would give. Now, it's only going to matter if we actually see it, but I would just urge you to hold kind of space in your thinking for this shooting could actually be better than we think. And I don't think that's, you know, an outlandish thought or a stretch. We spend a lot of time talking about the offense because it's easier to look at offensive numbers and to just kind of try and talk about that. But we, you know, defense, as we go through this offseason personally, I find myself having more questions about the defense than I do the offense, just in terms of matchups, in terms of consistency. You know, some of Carlisle's numbers defensively, when you look at synergy in terms of defending pick and rolls, you know, doing some of those things were good, even a little bit better than Jalen in some cases. It's really hard to know what to do with those defensive numbers if you don't actually watch the possessions, because they're just basing it on who is finishing the play as the defender, but you have no idea what led up to that. And obviously there's so much of that that goes in to defense. So I'm curious about Carlisle specifically. What do you think of his, you know, defensive ability at this point? And then how do you see this lineup coming together from a defensive standpoint?
I think Carlisle has all of the ability in the world to get down and guard. You know, his going into his college campaign, that was one thing that was talked about, is he'll get after it on the defensive end. I can't stress this enough, how hard it was to watch Stanford. They were bad offensively. They were even worse defensively. I think they were 128th in the country in defense. And a lot of that was effort, but it wasn't like lazy effort. It was just like not taught effort, if that makes any sense. But he gets down and he gets after it. And you know, I watched some of his overtime elite games too, just to see how he was in high school, or that year after high school in overtime elite. And he absolutely gets after it, which I think is what attracted Woody to him, is that like he's going to get down, he's going to guard the ball, and you know, he's like Miles Rice in that he can kind of be the head of the snake and can apply ball pressure. And that's kind of what makes Woody's defense tick, is guys that can do that. So Carlisle, he wasn't a great defender at Stanford, but he was playing in a bad team defense. So it's hard to project from that. I like the tools that he's got. He's got good length. He's got good lateral quickness. He's got good instincts, which is a big part of it as well, playing defense. And so you pair him with a guy like Miles Rice that also gets after it, and it becomes a pretty fun backcourt. When you talk about the whole wheel of Indiana's defense, obviously I don't think it's a secret to anybody that Mackenzie Mbako really struggled on the defensive end, especially off the ball, as a freshman. I don't think he's going to make this like gigantic leap where all of a sudden he's just some lockdown guy, but I do think that being his second year in a system that does seem a little bit more complicated than what he's been used to, you should see some leaps, especially off the ball. But, you know, I'm not going to put him as like a plus defender for next season. Malik Renew, I think his foul troubles were well-documented. Teaser, we'll be talking about that tomorrow on my film room that we post, just kind of diving into his fouls and where he can be better. But a lot of his fouls were either silly fouls like 90 feet from the basket or fouls guarding guys off the dribble. Well, he's going to be the four, it seems like, a lot of the time for when he's in the Indiana lineup. And when he's the four, he's got to guard some guys that can put the ball on the deck and try to get to the hoop. So he's got to be better keeping guys in front of him. And then if guys do go around him, understand his value, that sometimes you just got to let it go and you know, not try to compound mistakes and turn one into two, and now you're in foul trouble on the bench. So I have some concerns of him guarding fours. And then Ballo, he's a fine rim protector. He's not magnificent at it. I think he was like a 5% block rate or something along those lines. Ware is a tick better than that. But what I really like about Ballo is his rebounding ability and the ability to clean up the glass. I don't know this to be true. I have a feeling that the staff is really going to work with Malik on his rebounding. I think he can become a much better rebounder than he's been in his first two seasons. So when you put together, you know, the two guards that are going to be able to apply ball pressure, which changes the dynamic of a defense. It really does. Because then you don't let teams get into the stuff that they want to run. Even if you've got McKenzie Mbako that might lose his man on a pin down or whatever, the ball pressure doesn't allow that to be, you know, a precision pass that's right in the guy's shooting pocket, whatever the case may be. My primary concerns would be keeping Malik out of foul trouble and him rebounding at a higher clip, but I don't really have a ton of concerns about Ballo. Doesn't really have a high foul rate. Seemingly protects the rim pretty well. You know, not like a elite, but not horrible at it. You know, to me, it's really going to come down to kind of the three and the four spots and what they're able to do in getting stops and then securing the rebounds.
You know, it's interesting. I mean, you can think back to so many moments last season where it felt like opponents were just making every shot against Indiana. But, you know, Indiana had a top 100 effective field goal percentage defense. That's not great, you know, but it's decent enough, you know, 51st and 2-point field goal percentage. That number may go up just a little bit because I think, to your point, Ballo probably is not as, you know, active of a shot blocker and rim protector as Khalil Ware was. But what really killed Indiana last year defensively is a defensive turnover rate of 14.9%. I mean, we just didn't turn teams over. And allowed an offensive rebound percentage of roughly 30%, which was 211th. So being below average in both of those areas, you know, even if you're making teams miss shots, well, they're getting extra opportunities because of offensive rebounds, and you're not getting some of those, you know, hidden possession differences by forcing turnovers. Well, Rice has a steal rate of 3%, you know, which is good and should help Indiana force a few more turnovers. And especially the rebounding with Ballo, you know, hopefully Renew just with another year of strength and maturity will be a better and more consistent rebounder because he can be. Like when Malik is focused on the glass, he's a good rebounder. I just think at times last year, there was such a load on him offensively and he was so worried about picking up fouls. And as a sophomore still learning how to play hard all the time, which, hey, a guy like Trace went through that too. You know, I think you really see that in the rebounding. And Mbako, for his struggles, he's going to get scored on. He's going to get driven. He's going to lose his man. He does help make up for it some with being able to get tough defensive rebounds. And so, you know, that's where, you know, I do have some concerns about, you know, some of the individual defenders and probably especially with all these new guys together in a complicated, you know, system, seeing some of the miscommunications early in the season that we saw last year. You know, you're probably because, you know, Rice and Carlisle are still kind of young players and it's a tough system. But, you know, overall, if they can force more turnovers, get more rebounds, you still may be able to compensate for some of that. And, you know, my thoughts on defense, and I'm curious if you agree with this, you know, I would rather build a team that is offense first, where you can easily project the offense to be better and have questions about defense, but have some requisite size and athletic ability. I just don't think being great on a possession-by-possession basis on defense is as important for tournament runs as what your defensive ceiling is. You know, you look at a lot of these teams like Virginia and Wisconsin and Houston and Iowa State and others that the metrics love because their efficiency margin is big because of the defense, but you put them in a tournament scenario when everything is turned up a notch and they don't seem to perform as well. Yet Alabama, right, that was terrible on defense all year, but had the athleticism. When they turned it up on defense in the tournament, they were able to get stops. And so I think situational defense is so important. And I think some of these pieces and what Indiana may get from the bench may help them, you know, from a situational standpoint, you know, be more of a team that is going to have ups and downs in the regular season and be very frustrating. But once it comes to tournament play, can be better situationally and be a little bit more amoeba-like in terms of playing different styles, which is what we just have not seen from Indiana basketball the last three seasons. It's plan A, and if plan A is working, we're going to do well. If plan A is not working, we're losing by 20. You know, I think we'll see less of that because the offense will have more firepower and the defense when it really needs to buckle down and get a stop, has some of the physical ability to do it, if that makes sense.
Yeah, you can be more agile in what you do, certainly. You know, all indications seem to be that Trey Galloway may be a guy coming off the bench to start. I think you're going to see him finish a lot of games he'll lock in, he'll guard. He's not afraid to get down and dirty. And so, like you said, there's lineup diversification that, again, we fall into this trap a lot where, you know, everybody looks great on paper to start the year, and then, you know, you kind of dive into the season, you're like, wow, how did I ever think this team was deep? They can only play three guys, which, you know, I hope that that's not the case next season. It doesn't seem like it, because you're also not having to project a lot of guys forward to take these huge leaps. Like, you know, we talked about Rice and Carlisle and Mbako going freshman to sophomore leaps, but their freshman seasons weren't freshman seasons like Caleb Banks or CJ Gunn that Indiana was really going to have to rely upon to take leaps last season. Like, these are leaps for guys that averaged 11 and 14 points per game to even take it maybe a step further and become more efficient in how they score that 11 and 14 or whatever the case may be. So I'm with you. It seems like the pieces that Indiana's putting together all have proven track records to be productive in the college game. And with that, you just have some more pieces where you can do some more things. You know, you could, let's say Luke Goody comes to Indiana, you could play him at a stretch four to end games, or you need a shot, and you can play him and Mbako together alongside Malik Renu at the five. When you can go a little bit smaller and play more outside-oriented. So there's a lot of things on paper this team can do differently, and you can win games in different ways. Like you said, to me, defensive efficiency is important. You want to be a good defensive team, but once you get in these tournament situations, I mean, you're dissecting the opponent at a level even deeper than you are during the season, and you know, you're trying to take away everything that they do well and game planning against every little nuance that they've got, and you know every set they're going to run and things like that, where you can lock down a little bit better on the defensive end. I mean, look at Illinois as a case where they were pretty horrid defensively most of the season, and then they got in the NCAA tournament, and obviously they ran into the UConn buzzsaw as well, but you know, they made it to the Elite Eight and kind of were able to lock down a little bit. So it's an exciting time. You know, April tends to be that for IU fans the last couple of seasons. And, you know, and I don't mean that in like a horrible way, but it's just they do have to produce now. They've got great talent, and Carlisle is certainly one of those pieces that Indiana needs to see produce. But it does, I don't think it's a bad thing to be excited about what this roster could look like, you know, especially with the addition of Carlisle, which seemingly would be to one of your top five and one of your top two guards.
It's important, I think, you know, if you're going to have a public platform talking about the team, trying to educate fans, it's important that you learn the lessons of previous seasons, you know? And so you look at last season, and especially the people who are more optimistic in the preseason, pointing at myself here, very easy to say, okay, well, you know, you were all excited last offseason, and now here you go again this season. But I think it's important to understand what lessons you learned. And when you look at last season, there was so much projection happening. You know, Xavier Johnson is coming off the injury. Obviously, there was the high end of his projection, which was basically everything that I said. And then there was the reality, which didn't work out. He never looked healthy. Some of the maturity, I think, that we hope to see after sitting out, none of that happened. And your point guard play wasn't what you expected. You know, you had to project forward with Khalil Ware. That went better than anybody could have expected. But then you go to the bench and you're really relying on, you know, Anthony Walker, who was a low usage guy at Miami, you know, maybe being better in this system, really wasn't. CJ Gunn and Caleb Banks really needed to take steps forward. They'd never shown it before, you know, and that didn't happen, and on and on. And what you're looking at now is, even if Rice, Carlisle, and Ballo are like 5% less than what they were last season, we'll be a better offensive team because, you know, just in terms of what it's being compared to. Now, I think, you know, especially because Rice and Carlisle are freshmen going to sophomores, and you also have Mbako there, that's when you would expect the biggest jump. And same thing on the bench. You know, yes, Bryson Tucker, you don't quite know what to expect from him, but you know Anthony Leal can give you good minutes in a pinch. Goody, obviously, you know, functioned well on one of the top offenses in the country at Illinois last year. If he comes, you know you can get that. And so, you know, Cups at least has a year of experience, you know, playing on a lineup that actually functioned well. He could get out there and at least provide some of that. So I think that's the difference, is last year there was just so much more projection that needed to happen. This year, you need to do some of that projection if the goal is, hey, top 25 and let's, you know, be a team that could, you know, make a deep run in the tournament. But just to say, let's get back to at least just competitiveness and respectability, seems like the pieces are already in place for that if they just function how they did last year. And so that's where, you know, my optimism has been regenerated. And now I'm very, very excited to see what the staff can do. We all have questions about how this is going to function. We all have worries from the past, but I do take seriously the counter arguments that, okay, but you haven't actually seen Woody's offense with two creators like this, and even a third one in Galloway that you can go to if someone gets hurt, who you really want to play small. And I think that's true. And I'm very excited to see. It's no guarantee that it's going to work out, but I do think that's where, if you're really looking for the reasons to be optimistic, that's where I think this season is different from what we saw last season. And really, because of the acquisitions that they've made here in the offseason, actually has a ceiling, you know, if some of these guys really take jumps like we think they're going to.
Absolutely. And, you know, I'm not clamoring to pay a bunch of attention to national media folks, but you know, a lot of them were pretty spot on last season going into the year about Indiana's roster construction and some of the concerns they had with Indiana's roster. And, you know, several of those guys, you know, projected Indiana to not be that great, not make the NCAA tournament. That, you know, that a lot of them noted the shooting concerns or whatever the case may be. And they were kind of right. And, you know, we all hated it at the beginning of the season. And you know, we, as fans, sometimes it's hard to see the forest through the trees. You don't really know what else is out there, and you just get so ingrained in your team and these projections that we are making for guys and all those things, which, you know, Jared, you and I were both super high on X. We got dunked on Twitter by all kinds of opposing fan bases as the year went on.
Had to take it all season long. That's fine.
And but with that, now you look at some of these national guys, you know, Indiana's in the top 20 of Rothstein and Goodman and the Bart Torvik roster cast. They're, I think, 15th if you include Luke Goody on their roster, where they were never projected better than like 37th, I think, in Torvik going into last season. So while I'm not clamoring to just pay a bunch of attention to these national guys, because a lot of them use Indiana as just engagement farms, but with that said, they all have a better vantage point of Indiana going into next season already with just the roster where it's at, which they still have to add a couple pieces, and that versus where it was last season going into it. We saw how last season played out. So hopefully, you know, this linear progression of what the national media thinks also lends to Indiana winning more games and ultimately being a better team.
Yeah, it's interesting. I tend not to read some of the national guys because I do think their incentives are more about engagement and clicks and stuff like that. But there are some that I do like because their incentives are about, you know, building their authority and building respect in their projections. I think the Sleepers media guys have done a good job, and they were more right about Indiana last year than I was. I think the three-man weave guys do a good job. I think Ant Wright does a pretty good job of looking at the Big Ten with a kind of a sober, balanced perspective. So if you're looking for some names, I say, like, okay, you know, starting to hear some optimism from the Indiana podcasters, let's go listen to some other guys. I think those are some names that tend to give pretty respectable analysis on some of the teams. Last thing I want to talk about, you know, we've mentioned Luke Goody's name a lot. He from Illinois has played the last three seasons there. Entered his name in the transfer portal. There's, you know, a lot of smoke that he's going to be coming. We went through this a few days ago with Connor Asijan. It seemed like there was a lot of smoke with him coming, and he ends up at Nebraska, which frankly, based on the way Asijan plays, I think was a really smart decision for him. And I think Goody would be a much better fit for Indiana based on how we use three-point shooters. So just quickly, you know, kind of give me some thoughts. If he comes, where does he kind of fit in, and how good of a fit do you think that is for Indiana?
I'm with you in terms of I think it's a better fit for this roster to Indiana to grab Goody, who can play technically anywhere from the two to the four. I don't think you're really going to see him at the two, but you technically could put him there. You know, I think Indiana's kind of recruiting him as more of like a stretch four off the bench that, you know, has proven production in the Big Ten, was a 39% three-point shooter on decent volume last season. A guy that is a spot-up shooter, which, as you noted, is more conducive to how Indiana plays. You know, Indiana's not running a bunch of guys off pin-down screens and shooting off the screens. You know, it's more so moving the basketball around the horn, creating advantages, and then kicking out for a spot-up or whatever the case may be. So fits the nature of that very well. You know, their Illinois fans were never in love with the way he guarded, certainly. And, you know, I don't think he's going to be like a plus defender or anything like that, but I think he's one of those guys that's been around long enough to kind of understand where he needs to be, to at least put up a fight, you know, on the defensive end. But if he's isolated in a, you know, on a dribble drive against a guard, I don't think he's going to be able to stay in front of him or anything like that either. But for what Indiana was looking to fill at that spot, I can't imagine there's a much better fit out there that is willing to fill that role. You know, that's a guy that just, like I said, played in the Elite Eight, was on a really good offense and was very productive within that offense. And you know, not somebody that's looking to fill a starting spot or whatever. You know, I know a lot of folks wanted the Humdinger kid or Hummerkaus or however you pronounce it from Evansville, humidor, humidifier. but he wants to start, it seems. And, you know, there's a lot of guys out there that are very good players that people are like, well, why isn't Indiana going for them? Well, Indiana, you got to look at it. Like you already noted, they've got their top seven guys pretty much in order now. You're trying to fill depth pieces. And the fact that you can get a productive Big Ten player that's in a senior year, there's not a much better fit that I can imagine willing to take that role.
No, he's a guy who doesn't need the ball to be productive. Does have some defensive shortcomings, but again, you know, you got to have a defensive system that helps you cover up for some of those as well. And it's not always going to happen, but he is a guy. I remember his first 2 years at Illinois, I would watch them play and I'd be like, all right, I kind of see why Archie passed on him, honestly. But he was a freshman and a sophomore. Now he gets more mature, you know, gets better pieces around him at Illinois. And he, to me, is a guy. He reminded me somewhat of like Colin Hartman on really good Indiana teams, where he can step out and make the three and he's going to make the right pass. He's going to tap the rebound, you know, out to the guard to get it. He's going to save possessions, like just do those kind of little things. And I just think as his awareness and confidence has grown, his ability to impact the game was better. And I found myself really impressed with him this season. So when that word came, I was like, I mean, to me, it's a perfect fit. It would absolutely round out your top eight. Then you've got to get, you know, he to me is like a rich man's Anthony Leal. And I don't mean that as a knock on Anthony, but I think he's a little bit better shooter, a little bit quicker, maybe not quite the strength, you know, but has just had more minutes to get comfortable. And you know, you look at everything that Anthony provided last year, and I think having another guy who can do that would be nice. Let me just hit this one
somebody
question.
Somebody that's one, too.
Yeah, like, exactly.
That's
and in the Big Ten.
That's important. Exactly.
Yeah. So this was an interesting question, I think, from Nick. He said, do you think the fact that you were wrong fueled the reactionary response from you? And I think he's talking about last season, you know, when we were all very frustrated with Mike Woodson and had all of our discussions about that. And I've thought about this a lot, you know, because I always try and be mindful of cognitive biases and how they play into the things that we say. And I can honestly say I don't think that was part of the response, because our goal with this show has always been, hey, seasons are going to ebb and flow. Let's really try to meet the team where they are. And as I've said, I wish we had delayed certain conversations. I think it was more fueled by the fact that, you know, look, I thought, hey, this could be a top 25 to top 35 team. KenPom in the preseason had him at 50 or whatever it was. And I remember thinking, geez, that seems really low. If that's the floor, okay. And then the bottom dropped out even worse than that. And then when you end up with kind of the recruiting picture that we had in February and March, it was very easy to be pessimistic about what was happening moving forward. And so I think the response was to that and some of the objective measurements that we all use to decide, is this program on the right track or not? But I never felt like, you know, I mean, I never stopped supporting Xavier Johnson and never will, even though that didn't go well. Like, it wasn't about that. I think I think probably the biggest thing that I've learned in terms of those reactions is, especially when it comes to recruiting, you just got to have some patience with it, because things have changed so fast and things can change so fast moving forward. And even if you don't have a great high school recruiting class locked in, if you've got the NIL resources and the connections, you can make up for that very quickly. I think I underestimated the ability to do that. And so that is what I think fueled the response. And I wouldn't necessarily call it reactionary. I think it was something that took a long time, over 3 years of, you know, seeing some frustrations, weighing positives and negatives. But, you know, to the staff's credit, Tony, I think some of those concerns, you know, obviously we can't talk about wins and losses and anything like that. The stuff that really matters, we won't know until November and December and into the season. But some of the recruiting things, I do think it's fair to say the staff has helped to assuage those concerns with what they've gone out and done in the portal. And obviously, you know, some of the news today about going four deep to see Braylon Mullins and focusing on these in-state guys, you know, you can't do anything but tip your cap and give them credit if we were very pessimistic about it and concerned about it 2 months ago. And that was all part of that stew. And this first part, they're on the right track, and, you know, we'll just kind of see what happens moving forward. So I'm curious if you have a different response to what Nick said.
No, I'm pretty much in line with where you're at. You know, my concerns on Indiana in February and March didn't really have anything to do with what I thought about the team in, you know, October. You know, it was a bad team, and the recruiting picture wasn't great, like you said. And look, I want to make it very clear. I am thrilled that Indiana is doing well in the portal. Like, I don't want them to lose. I didn't want them to lose. I'm thrilled that this Indiana team and staff is putting together a great portal haul, and it's why I'm optimistic about what they can do moving forward. So I want to make that super, super clear. Like, I know I was negative and pessimistic, you know, about the prospects of Mike Woodson continuing to lead the Indiana program. Going into 2024-25, I feel pretty good about the team. And I'm completely willing to have my mind change. And there are some things that are changing already, like you said, in terms of the recruiting picture and the roster construction and things like that. And I think most reasonable folks like you and I can understand that people had a difference of opinion on what the trajectory of the program was moving forward and still want the same things and for the program to do well and whatnot. So to me, you know, it wasn't the fact that I thought the team was going to be a little bit better. It was that the team was so poor, you know, especially in the dog days of February and whatnot, that I was just like, man, this is not looking good. And I wanted Indiana to be better. And to the staff's credit, it looks like Indiana is going to be better. And I'm excited about that. And, you know, that's ultimately what we all want.
Yeah. Excited, but cautious. You know, as Lisa says, correct, style of play also was an issue. And I think that stays true. You know, I think the 3-point shooting will be more efficient than some, but at some point the volume, like, we have to be able to use the 3-point line better. From an offensive standpoint, the defense can't be so susceptible to it. There are still some kind of systematic philosophical things that I question, but those questions are open-minded. You know, I don't feel like they're answered. We have another year to get evidence from Mike Woodson, and I'm very open-minded to what this looks like when it feels like now he's maybe got, at least going into the season, the roster that is most conducive to him playing and succeeding the way he wants to play basketball. You got to see it. You know, it has to all actually happen. I don't want to just take it all on faith. I'd like to see evidence. But just as we have with the recruiting, there's evidence. This is getting better. That's awesome. You start seeing that evidence in November and December. And I think a lot of us, the confidence level, not just the excitement, but the actual real confidence level will start to grow. Like, you can't say what we said in February and March and then just pretend that you're fully confident again until the games start. That'd be ridiculous. But remaining open-minded, I think, is the key. You know, and so to anybody who's kind of written things off, you know, the talent is upgraded. It seems to fit together much better. And, you know, let's see how they fill out the back part of the roster and then just stay open-minded about how all this can fit. Tony, any final thoughts before we sign off for the afternoon?
No, not really. You know, ultimately, you know, this was about Kanan Carlisle, and I'm excited about his addition to Indiana and what he can bring. I think especially as a secondary creator, that's kind of where I envision him being alongside Miles Rice. Two dudes from Atlanta that were buddies growing up. Like, that's
along with
your not kind. That they have like, yep. And not that they have like this big playing chemistry or anything together, but just like human chemistry is important on the basketball floor. So to have that is nice to have. And, you know, it's Miles Rice already came back for a little 500 weekend and was in gym. And it just seems like, you know, you're building something, that people can get excited about, you know, which a lot of folks are. And like you said, excited but cautious. And it's not like, you know, I think this is a Final Four team or anything like that, but it doesn't have to be in April. You know, you want to see things come together. And, you know, as of right now, it seems the roster's coming together in a pretty good spot where, you know, you can be hopeful and optimistic about what Indiana can do. And it's also hopeful and optimistic that, like, things are rounding themselves out here by April 23rd. And, you know, you're able to go four deep for high school recruits right now because you're not just stuck in the portal and just trying to get guys on campus or whatever the case may be, because you're really scrambling to fill out your roster spots. And so I do think Indiana learned some lessons from the portal haul last year. You know, they took some early commitments from some guys that were a little bit head scratching, and then they went big game hunting with some other guys that they never really got traction on. And then all of a sudden it was like, oh crap, we're out of options. And so I think that, you know, some of the names and stuff that you've heard like floated about visiting Indiana, and then they were pushed back and here and there, I think Indiana had a lot more irons in the fire, and they were playing this game of, if this guy doesn't come, then we've got this guy here and we've got this guy here. So I think just the if-thens were greater this season. And I think it's paying off to, like I said, be here on April 23rd, and you're feeling pretty good with where your roster's at, and you're able to continue to build relationships with these 2025 guys, which is a very important class for the state of Indiana. So that part of it is exciting as well. And like I said, you tip your cap to the staff to be in this spot with where they're at. And so, you know, it's a good place to be, I think, for Indiana.
Like you said, maybe this isn't a Final Four team. Who the hell knows how to project Final Four teams? NC
Correct.
State made the Final Four last year.
Correct.
And they were basically in the same spot. They were like, what, 12 points higher in KenPom than Indiana when they went on their conference tournament run and ended up in the Final Four. So who knows? This team could do all kinds of things. We have no idea.
And down to Louisville at half of the first round of the ACC tournament.
That is so absurd. That is just unbelievable. Unbelievable. All right. Well, hey, thank you all for being here. I echo a lot of what Tony said. I'm really excited about the Kanan Carlisle commitment, very bullish on it. You know, I think pairing him with Miles Rice is excellent. You know, it's going to be, you know, as soon as that happened, I said, this is Indiana's most dynamic backcourt since. And that doesn't necessarily mean it's going to be their most successful or most productive. But in terms of the amount of things that they can do with the basketball and off the ball, I mean, it's the most dynamic backcourt in a long time. It really is. And so I think that's going to give Indiana a lot of options. It's going to make the games just a lot more exciting and interesting to watch. And I'm very excited about it. And if this all can coalesce from a chemistry standpoint, the last thing I'll say, Tony, before we get out of here, you know, when you're rebuilding a roster like this, obviously chemistry is a big question. Right, you've got these new guys that have, you know, certain expectations. You got guys on the bench that have expectations. It's all going to be fine if we're winning. Every Mike Woodson season has featured at least one stretch of like, what the hell's going on here? You know, of losing three in a row or things kind of seeming to go off the rails. And Woody, to his credit, has, you know, always been able to kind of pull things, you know, back on the track. Sometimes a little bit too late, but it's always gotten pulled back on the track. But you know, you think back to Malik Renew's conversation with the Hysterics, and one of the things he talked about was just it took the team a while to come together. And one of the things I heard from someone in Bloomington who talked to Cliff Marshall was that Cliff Marshall has basically been put in charge of helping to develop chemistry, you know, and put, you know, team meetings together and get guys together and work on, let's build these relationships. seeing that to me is an indication of a lesson learned from last season and a step toward correcting it. I don't think the guys didn't like each other, but like you said, personal chemistry bleeds onto the basketball court because it's about trust, you know, and just about liking that person. And you can have a successful basketball team that doesn't like each other if all the talent is there. But when you have both, it sure makes things better and allows you to navigate choppy waters better. That is one place where I take some optimism, you know, because again, you got to learn lessons from each season and hope to make them better. And it really seemed this offseason is showing me that some lessons have been learned and some different things are being tried. And I think that's another reason for Indiana fans, even if you don't want to be optimistic yet, at least be open-minded and say, this could be different. Let me pause my final judgments or reopen judgments I had previously made to be open-minded and take in the full year of evidence. That's what we're trying to do. That's what I would suggest everybody do. And let's just come together. And hopefully it's a really fun season where these guys all come together and we see a lot of good basketball. All right. Stay tuned. I don't know if we're going to be back on Thursday for Assembly Call Radio. It's kind of up in the air, but we'll have another one. We'll have Assembly Call Radio for sure the next week. And whenever we can, whenever new commitments come, whether it's an emergency pod or a delayed emergency pod as we did today, we'll try and get here to give you some insight. But thanks for being here. As always, keep your elbows in and your eyes on the rim, and go Hoosiers.